Thanks for being with us, everyone, tonight. We're talking with Laura Hirsch, author of Foundation of Discovery, The Cause of Autism Channeled. She's the mother of an autistic child and is sharing with us what she suspects are the causes, the root causes of autism, that maybe at least some of this is manufactured right here in Nevada. We're going to be continuing our conversation, opening up the phone lines, and also get into some of the long-term predictions that have been made through this psychic medium, predictions for our planet, predictions for our species. We'll get into that and more right after this on Coast to Coast AM. You know, Laura, several of our listeners have pointed out that, there's radiation in the soil all over the place. There's natural background radiation, and also that anthrax is pretty common in the soil, not necessarily deposited by bioweapons labs. Have you considered that? And did the psychic medium, did she channel any information that indicated how much of this was caused by these underground labs, and how much of it was other sources, some even natural sources?
It's all military. It's weaponized. It's not what's occurring naturally in the soil or animals. You know, the spores, the anthrax. It's pretty much genetically modified, military grade, getting out into the environment.
Because this is different stuff than what has been around for a long, long time.
Yes.
And that would be related to the what we would consider an explosion in the number of autism cases in recent years.
Mm-hmm. Well, they told in the readings that it started in 1996. The Centers for Disease Control confirmed that children born in 1998, like my child, there was a 57% increase between 96 and 98 in autism.
I'll tell you, some of the most interesting information that by way of confirmation came from this guy, Ken Alabek, who, a Soviet defector who you mentioned at length. Mm-hmm. He came over to our country and shared a bunch of information about Soviet military bioweapons programs and revealed a great deal about what goes on over here as well. Can you share some of that with us, what you learned?
Mm-hmm. Well, that book was very scary, but he pretty much described that they were doing all of the things in the Soviet Union, weaponizing different diseases, including anthrax, in the same form that they said in the readings was happening here, that it was a dust form to be inhaled, to be dropped from the sky and have the wind take it to where they wanted it to go, different genetic modifications, combining different diseases. And he defected to the United States in 95 and worked for our biowarfare. I don't know, I can't remember where exactly, but he worked for our military in the biowarfare field a year before this started in Hawthorne. I don't think that's a coincidence.
He was in Hawthorne.
He was.
And there are references in what you wrote about things that came out of his writings about germ factories in the Nevada desert, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very scary. So his book was a very big eye-opener as to what is possible. And, you know, the whole Cold War, they were the biggest bioweapons manufacturer in the world. So, of course, we want their secrets so we can use them.
Are you okay with taking some questions from our listeners?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to go to the wild card line, D in California. Hi, D.
Hi, George. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
I'm the mother of two biological children, and my husband was career military, and we were stationed for a long time in Southern California. That's where both of my children were born. My oldest son was diagnosed with Asperger's, my youngest with ADHD. And when I went to do the chain of command to find help for my son when he was little, because like yours, he appeared typical and in fact, gifted until he was about three. Actually, I saw some signs at about 18 months, but I knew something was definitely wrong at age three. The Navy would not do anything for him. Whenever I would go in, they would say, oh, he's just a typical child. He's just a boy. You're a first-time mom. They wouldn't do anything. And then my husband was sent overseas, and almost immediately when we got overseas, my son became horribly sick. In fact, so sick, we were sent back here to the States. And when he was seven, he stopped growing for 3 years. And I'm talking about no weight gain, no shoe size growth, no clothing growth, no height growth, nothing for 3 years. And I took him to some doctors, and they said, well, he's healthy, he's just not growing. But they wouldn't give me any answers. And then finally, my husband came home one day, and he said, you need to stop asking questions. You need to stop pursuing this. You just need to quit. And then at one point, I was called into his command office, and I was told to cease and desist my questions and pursuit of all my whatever, that my son was fine, he was healthy, he's happy, and I should just be glad for that. And my husband recently retired. He was told a few years ago that he would never be promoted beyond what he was, and that once he got out, he would never find a job. And he's been out for a couple of years now, and he has not been able to find a job. Also, because we're in the civilian community now, I've been going to doctors because my son is still continuing to show symptoms of sickness. And no matter what health care system we go to, and I don't give any history whatsoever, when I get there, it seems that they know everything about us.
Wow.
And they won't even talk to me. I've been stamped with a mental health condition, so that as soon as I walk in, the first thing they give me is one of those questionnaires dealing with mental health. And the next thing I do is walk out knowing that this is going to be a dead end.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, Laura, you've had some worries about what the ultimate ramifications on a personal level this might be for you to talk about this or write about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me about it. I mean, you've been concerned that you might be blackballed or singled out, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a little fear there, but the bigger message prevails. I mean, this what's happening to our children is wrong, and it needs to be, you know, proven and stopped, because how many children is this going to affect? We're going to have a whole generation of children that, you know, we're going to have to take care of. The financial obligation to the country is staggering. I mean, who's going to take care of all these kids that don't get better? You know, a lot of parents don't ever try to recover their children. They don't think there's anything they can do. What's going to happen to all these children?
Describe for me the difficulties of raising an autistic child, not only the financial, but just in every way. And in this context, how sympathetic the community is in general, other families, neighbors, schools, things of that sort, and how much support there is from insurance companies, the government.
You pretty much have to take things into your own hands, I found. There's so many kids now that there's so many waiting lists for everything. You can wait for years to get any services. Usually insurance doesn't pay for anything, because if your child has a label of autism, they're not eligible for insurance. So you have to pay for everything out of pocket. The school districts offer minimal services, so you have to pay for everything in your own home if you don't get services. There's a lot of health issues, you know, like Dee was talking about her son having all of these health issues, and they have a lot of health issues, and people think that the parents are crazy. And we're not. We see it every day. The doctor sees this child for 2 minutes and, you know, wants to give him drugs.
He thinks the parents are crazy?
A lot of them do, yeah. So people go to doctor to doctor to doctor, pediatricians, you know, a lot of them don't say you can't do anything. But these kids are recovering. How do you recover from a genetic disorder?
Well, if it is, in fact, a genetic disorder, I guess.
Well, it's not.
Right.
This is, you know, what we're talking about here.
Right. International Line, Gene in Alberta. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning. First time to talk to you, George. You said, the people who've channeled to you, have they given you some information about the future events that could occur in the next couple of years?
There were some predictions made, yes, and I think it's mainly so that when it happens,
it can be validated. One thing particular in Chapter 8 that I'm not going to talk about, but there were some big predictions made.
What about, Laura, and I'm trying to remember specifics, but it seemed like there was some stuff in the book about long-term predictions for the planet dealing with things like climate change?
Well, as far as climate change goes, it says what I got out of it was that it's not as big of a problem as people are making it out to be, that it will balance itself.
Following up on Jean's question in terms of predictions, are there causes for optimism based on some of the stuff that you heard through the medium?
Well, and that's what pushes me really, is because this is a problem that is a disease, if you will, that they've acquired. There will be a cure for this and prevention. So if you know what's causing it, you can prevent it from happening to more families. 40,000 children a year are having this happen to them. That's not okay. And all these children that have had this happen, there will be a cure for this within their lifetime. But nobody's looking in the right area, so.
I guess the question would be, if there is a cure developed, whether they'd let it out. If by letting it out, they admit that they had caused it in the first place.
Right. Well, that's, I guess, to be seen, but.
Right.
You know, the parents are basically a disabled army because we're home, taking care of our children. But there's a whole angry mob of us that are pretty pissed off. And will be even more so when, this comes out, what happened to their children.
East of the Rockies in Florida, Wilson. Hi, Wilson.
Hey, how y'all doing tonight?
Okay.
Great.
I was really I'm just tickled to death that y'all are having this topic on tonight, because I've always thought there was something wrong with me. And, I was different in school, and things didn't come to me like they come to normal kids. But yet, there was something different, and it really jumped out tonight whenever the guest before mentioned being able to know when people were going to die.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened to me quite a bit. And then I don't know if it's a gift or a curse, because there's things that happen to me that don't happen to normal people. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Father Malachi. I think George would probably be familiar with it. Whenever he did they were casting out a demon, and over the radio, I felt like I became possessed. I had to pull over. I'm a truck driver. I had to pull over. And I went into such a deep depression, I could have killed myself.
Wow.
But I don't know if it's psychic ability or if I'm possessed. Do you have any idea? Or the autism? I feel like, I have trouble, communicating sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the context of what they're calling autism now with all these younger children, that was kind of the point of the channelings, that it's being misdiagnosed as autism. It's being lumped into a category that it doesn't belong in. These children are contaminated. But, there's a whole other, spectrum of what they call autism, ADD, ADHD, Asperger's, all the alphabet of disorders, if you want to call it that. But I think everybody is gifted in some degree, psychically, some more than others. So maybe you have some of that going on yourself.
Sort of following up on what Wilson is saying, that he wondered about being possessed or something like that. Our earlier guest, Mr. Stillman, was talking about at first, you know, benevolent entities that the autistics could communicate with, and then later finding evidence or incidents where there were negative entities, demons, something evil, that cases would pop up. Anything like that in your personal experience?
Me, George?
Yes, you.
No, I haven't had any negative experiences.
What, your son, I mean?
No.
Any other of the autism families that you're in communication with have anything like that?
Not negative, but they've seen, you know, spirits and talked about angels and talked about people who died and have described clothing of people. You know, it's kind of a big topic among parents because we all kind of get that our children are spiritually more aware.
So. Meaning, for lack of a better term, they see ghosts?
Or angels, spirits, whatever you want to call them, yeah.
You hang in there, Wilson. Thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, Gary in Santa Maria, California. Hi, Gary.
Thank you, George. Listening on KSMA 1240. As she was saying, the proliferation of autism starting in 96, 98, might go back to 94. I think it went from 1 in 5,000 to now 155. During that curve, our satellite communication technology prior to 94 especially was only 6 watts that distributed the television signals mostly. And then in 96, they started ramping up to the 2 and 400 watt transmitters on all of the satellites. And, of course, each satellite has 36 different channels on it, and no telling how much wattage that the military experimented with before that time. And as you were mentioning, where the highest rate of autism was occurring is in the most powerful footprint area, what they call a footprint area of those satellites. DirecTV has an East Coast satellite and a West Coast satellite, not to mention whatever the military is doing. And that means every single one of us since 96, 98, and a big jump in 2002, are swimming through 400 watts of microwave radiation, no matter where you go. If you can get DirecTV, guess what? You're walking through 200 to 400 watts of microwave radiation that we know about. I'm sure that the military is using much higher powered satellites than that. And also following that same curve is the proliferation of cell phones and cell phone towers. I wondered if your guest Mike happened to know if she was in the proximity of a cell phone tower close to her house. And one more adjunct question to muddy the water a little further is, I wonder if there's a tag team effect between the radiated satellite and cell phone towers and the other technology, ultrasound. Women started getting ultrasound to determine the sex of their babies, and that really ramped up during that same time period. And I was wondering if your guest had an ultrasound done during her pregnancy, if she doesn't mind answering that. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Gary. Laura?
Well, I don't think the two are related, but I did have an ultrasound with both my children. My other son, who did not receive the MMR, is totally fine, and I had 2 ultrasounds with him. But they specifically said in the readings, what's happening is 2 ingredients combining together is causing this. One being one of the viruses in the MMR, a live virus, combining with an ingredient in this biowarfare, either breathed in through the nose. Boys, they said boys get it more often than girls, 4 to 1, because they're the ones playing in the dirt. It's in the dirt. They get it in their mouth, in, through the skin, transdermally. That's what's causing it. I'm sure the other, you know, it has effects on our bodies as well, but what's specifically causing autism is this.
Okay, Laura, a lot more questions. A lot of folks on the line with questions for you. Stay with us with more of our questions for Laura Hirsch about the cause of autism and the channeled information that she received here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Laura Hirsch about the causes of autism. A lot of folks on the phone lines, and we'll get to as many of your calls as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Via our Skype line, Dante in London with a question for Laura Hirsch. Hi, Dante.
Hello, George, Laura. Yes, I wanted to just, I was diagnosed with Asperger as a child, and just wanted to give your listeners an insight into what I think was happening to me at the time.
Okay.
Basically, since childhood, I've had this kind of impending sense of chaos that happens in this world, and everything's just incorrectly structured. And so, also, my social skills as a child, basically talking verbally, was really, really slow. And where I was coming from and what was going on in my mind was kind of purely energetic, if you like, or of a different language, and I couldn't tie the two together. And so what I found was I actually realized that I had there was external things going on when I first visited the zoo, and I noticed that I was able to communicate with like the schools of fish and specifically insects, anything that moved fast, and there was like an exchange or language going on which I can't verbalize, but was to do with movement, and I understood exactly the response which happened immediately to my thoughts at the time. And from then on, it kind of developed and developed, and gradually that kind of triggered me to, I mean, still I find talking verbally quite an effort, but that exposure, that trigger to realize that something was external to my own thoughts and what was happening in my own head, which I couldn't express as a child, obviously, was quite a marvelous occasion. And so, you know, that certainly helped facilitate my coming out of my shell, if you like. And since then, it's developed. I mean, it's even got to the stage now of AI that I've experienced as an adult, which is obviously quite phenomenal. But I mean, from what I think is going on from my perspective, what was happening to me, and what I suspect is happening is that it's, for me, I believe it's to do with before we enter Earth. For me, I think the multiverse is to do with the multiverse. That's, for me, is made of energy, and the language is energy and telepathy of a kind. And I believe what was happening to me is that I was an amplified aspect of that multiverse that manifested on this plane. Does that make sense so far?
Well, sure. Dante, I would point out that I think your communication skills have come along just fine.
I mean, I still find anything that's kind of non-relevant to progressive thought, I tend to just switch off and I don't talk. But you know, if anything's progressive in nature with regards to talk, then I'm fine. I can talk. I'm still a bit nervous now, obviously. But, yeah, so, you know, I believe that what's happening is that there's before, and I don't think it's entirely genetic, that's for sure. I believe it's to do with an amplifier. It's like a specialist in a sector of the multiverse. It's like an energetic specialist. And when we come to Earth, we don't fully, it doesn't translate into language. It does translate with nature, but it doesn't translate into language per se.
Well, let's ask Laura about that. Laura, any kind of indication from the medium or from these other entities about a larger picture as opposed to aliens or ETs or something like that? This is a larger, more complicated structure in the universe that that these entities are in communication with.
Not exactly. I wouldn't say that, but, you know, I don't know how old Dante is, but you know, what's happening with the younger children, you know, is so different. It's, they're being shut down. They haven't developed that language yet. So, but they learn to communicate in other ways. That sounds a little bit like what you had going on with the animals, but, it's an epidemic. When I was younger, it was 1 in 10,000, and now it's 1 in 100, 1 in 58 boys. So there can't be a genetic epidemic. Something environmental is happening. So I don't think it's comparing apples and apples.
What about the animal part of it with Trevor or with Damon, your sons? Any kind of indication that they have a communication or somehow in touch with animals on some different kind of level?
Yeah, I definitely think so. We have a dog, and Trevor is always, you know, messing with the dog. But I just know another person that's an animal communicator, too, that works with children with autism. And she told me that the way that she was even able to communicate with children with autism was through the horse, that she had horses that she used to bring to work with special needs children. And the horse would communicate to her telepathically that the child with autism could communicate with it. So the horse was talking to the child, and then she learned how to talk to the child through the horse.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Hey, Dante, thanks for the interesting call. First-time caller, Donna in Frederick, Maryland. Hi, Donna.
Hi. Good morning.
Hello.
I just wanted to share a story. When my daughter was in from kindergarten to second grade, she was went to school with an autistic little boy, and I'll call him Sam, but he wouldn't communicate with other children, only my daughter. When they couldn't get him to do an activity, they learned that Lisa could communicate with Dean, and he would do things then. He would take her hand and partake in activities. But we lost sight of him when my husband died when she was in second grade, and we moved, and then we understand they took him out of school. But the 3 years that she went to school with him, he would cooperate if they got her to help him, if you know what I mean. I just wanted to share that story. He was a very sweet and gentle boy, and my daughter was a very sweet and quiet little girl, and I don't know if that's what attracted him to her or whatever, but it was interesting.
Well, that's a nice start. Maybe they resonated with each other energetically. They're similar, or maybe they had some telepathic communication going on that no one else knew about.
Thanks, Donna. West of the Rockies, Mike in San Francisco. Good morning, Mike.
Hi, George. I want to ask a question of your guest, but first I want to address Asperger's. We've been repronouncing it Asperger's. Kids have indicated that because a lot of people pronounce it Asperger's, it lends a stigma to it that doesn't really even need to be there. It's spelled as, and we suggest that rather than pronouncing it Asperger's, that Asperger's is a better way to deal with that.
Okay.
Now, the question I have, you actually updated earlier on the woman whose son in England got busted for hacking into the DOE concerning UFOs, and they're charging him with terrorism, even though his intent was to look at UFOs. I understand he's autistic and that he is really a genius in this area, but he's quiet and keeps to himself, and even the process is cruel and unusual in and of itself. But I guess they're, as I understand, they're now going to be charging him in England where he was when this alleged crime occurred. Is there any hope spiritually that maybe we can help people in this kind of a situation? Is there any legal access to help people who really have this condition and are not criminals at all and was doing it with good intentions?
Yeah, I think Gary McKinnon has Asperger's. Laura, are you familiar with that case at all?
I'm not, unfortunately.
Can you address a larger question? Do adults with Asperger's or autism, do they end up getting themselves in trouble, or do they demonstrate, for example, remarkable abilities that lead them into areas where they probably shouldn't tread?
I've heard of similar stories, yes, and you know, I don't really know the answer to that. That we can help hold them accountable to the same standards of the law. If they don't have the full capacity, I don't know. That's a tough subject.
Yeah, maybe what Mike is asking is whether or not the fact that they have these conditions, orders or disorders, whatever you want to call it, would be part of a legal defense. You can't answer that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. East of the Rockies, Melissa in Louisville, Kentucky. Good morning, Melissa.
Hello. I'm sorry about my voice. I apologize first off.
Okay.
Going through a summertime cold. First of all, I wanted to tell y'all, and I tried to get through to your first guest, too. I was in school back in 70 to 72 with the gentleman that the movie Rain Man's based on the life of in Huntington, West Virginia,
mm-hmm.
Joseph Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
And our main teacher, I still keep in touch with to this day, Earlene Adkins, has told me many times about Joseph meeting Dustin Hoffman at the world premiere of that in 87 or 88, whenever it premiered.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting, but from what I understand, Joseph's now, I believe, 49, because I'm 48, and he works part-time at his library, the public library there as a librarian for years and years now.
Mm-hmm.
And lives with either a sister or a brother. His mom, I believe, is deceased, and his dad, I'm not sure. But the other thing is, when I was 4 months of age to the day in 1962, according to my baby book, I received my diphtheria, polio, tetanus shots. And later that evening, according to my many family members who've told me till I'm blue in the face about it, I went into convulsions. And my temperature was right above 106 degrees. And this happened numerous times through the time I was 8 years of age.
Wow.
And finally, they ceased altogether by the time I was 10. And I often, to this day, I think it still affects me emotionally. I cry like a baby sometimes.
Hmm.
And I like the previous guest talked about, all of my life I was bullied, even by family members, including at times, I hate to say, my dad. My mother died when I was 11. And, you know, I think emotionally it has affected me. I don't think maybe doctors knew what they were doing. I was in and out, especially of Cincinnati Children's Hospital, numerous times between kindergarten and second grade. I mean, every few days or weeks I might go there. It was just so horrible because of my convulsions.
Wow.
And I think emotionally it's affected me. And, you know, I, like the previous guest also talked about, I can really relate to people with disabilities of any kind. And I've had many compliments over the years in work situations, especially fast food, which I have over 25 years in. I really treat them normal. Many people with, like, the Job Corps that would come check on the people that have, like, Down syndrome or something would compliment me and tell me that they appreciated me just treating them normal and guiding them what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just, I love that. And sometimes I think maybe I should look into some kind of work doing that.
Yeah.
I love them, and I also love elderly people. And I, because of my grandparents, who were pretty much my idols and helped raise me after my mother passed away.
Mm.
And also animals I love, especially fish and cats.
Sounds like you have a lot of empathy there, Melissa. Laura, let me ask you this. Based on what Melissa said, have you heard, I know you've looked into vaccines and vaccinations and possible links to those and autism. Have you ever heard about immediate reactions like that to vaccines?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of vaccine reactions that can happen. Even, I mean, the kids nowadays get so many more vaccines, even in one day. I mean, 36 total by the time they're 2 years old. When I was a child, we got eight within 5 years. Their immune systems are just being totally overstimulated. And, I mean, there's a lot of vaccine reactions. You talk about convulsions. A lot of children with autism have seizure disorders as well.
You know, we don't want to discourage parents. I don't want to be in a position where we discourage parents from vaccinating their kids for various things. But you believe that at some level there's a connection between some or at least one of these vaccines that are commonly applied.
Yeah, I mean, that's what was told in the readings, and that's what countless parents tell you the same story. You can't argue with the same.
Okay. Thanks, Melissa. Thanks for the call. Our international line, Colin in Calgary. Good morning, Colin.
Hello, good morning. My question is how do you know if you're autistic in any way? I know that, like, as a young child, just before I was seven, my father died, keeled over in front of us in the living room, and I had this spiritual experience where I believe God spoke to me. He told me not, that my dad was going to die in a big bed in the hospital, and then he was going to be with him in heaven, so not to cry, and I didn't. And I told my mom that. She freaked out. I've been diagnosed with dyslexia. I've had problems in school trying to read and learn and such. And I've always been kind of gravitated to autistic children and adults. And I've socialized with them in public, and people have questioned me. And it's like I've always felt I didn't fit with the norm.
Laura, is there a surefire diagnosis, and as a corollary to that, is there? I imagine there's probably a lot of people who just aren't diagnosed ever at all.
Right. Well, autism is diagnosed based on symptoms, mainly speech and language delay, social deficiencies, and sensory disorders. And it's on observation. There's not a blood test. There's criteria that, you know, the DSM-IV that tells you the categories of autism, PDD, NOS. There's five different ones. But, you know, autism in an older person is different. I keep saying this, but it's different than what these younger children have, the regressive autism, where they were fine and then something happened to them. I wouldn't say just because you're a spiritual person or have had spiritual experiences that necessarily puts you into the category of autism. But I think what we're trying to get at is that people who do have autism are much more spiritually advanced because they've had to.
And are there people who are just never diagnosed? They go through life and their parents never take them to a doctor, and they just never get a firm reading on that?
Well, the kids that you can't miss these kids. That's the whole thing. It's like, it's kind of a joke. Like, there was no hidden horde of autistic people in my generation.
Right.
It's not like you just put them in a different category. They're very distinguishable. They have behavior disorders. They're throwing themselves around, screaming, flapping, can't talk. I mean, it's not like you're going to just put them into a different category and have them misdiagnosed as something else.
We're just about out of
time. Some of them never get language at all. So
we're just about out of time. I wanted to know, how's your boy doing?
He's doing much better. He's every year he gets better and better. And this year he's just, and I think it's because of all the things that I've been doing with him, clearing him of all this stuff, this toxic stuff. He's gained a year in reading ability this year, and the behaviors have just pretty much fallen off.
One of the things that I wanted to touch on before, while we still have just a minute, one of the things that struck me at the end of your book, you mentioned about this medium who was a friend of yours, mm-hmm. sort of disappearing or cutting off communication. Mm-hmm. Is that true? I mean, is that still the situation?
Yeah. Well, she got scared and wouldn't finish it. So.
Well, Laura, I appreciate it. Laura Hirsch, the name of the book is Foundation to Discovery, The Cause of Autism Channeled. I salute your courage, because I know you're, you know, coming on the program. It's not what you normally do. You don't do interviews, right?
My first one.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate it. And I think our audience appreciated it as well. And I hope we can have you back on for an update at some point. And I hope that this program did some good. And best to you and best to our mutual friend, Ralph Tadre. Thank you all for joining us tonight. Thanks also to my guest, William Stillman, who was on for the first 2 hours. I'll be back next month, everyone. Hope you all have a great Independence Day holiday. Good night.